And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. Tonight, we have a great guest, Jean Adrian. Jean and I did a show on her show, which was Voice America, and I'm very excited to have you back. Intuitive Soul is about clearing a path to divine consciousness. So, welcome, Jean.
Thank you, Lori. I'm so happy to be with you again, and I can't wait get you back on my show. I'm going to do that after the first of the year.
You know, I'm going to be doing another show too coming up in November with CBS Radio. So I was thinking that you would have to come on there as well.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm excited.
That's very exciting. So, Jean, typically we start with, you know, what has been your journey that has gotten you to where you are now?
Well, it's been a really interesting one. I started off as a child, fascinated by things spiritual. You know, I was raised in a family where we were very religious, kind of fundamental. I was raised a Methodist and had to go to church every Sunday. You had to have a doctor's excuse. You know, that was my daddy's rule. And, you know, so I grew up going to Sunday school, going to church, reading the Bible, and searching. And it's almost like I've spent my entire life searching and looking for the truth. And that included exploring pretty much every religion, up including to the point that I actually went to seminary, trying to find the answers in traditional Christianity. And I never was really able to get exactly what I was looking for. It was always just like that elusive butterfly, and it was somewhere just outside my reach. But I kept looking and looking, and, you know, and all of that is part of making me who I am today. Absolutely, you know, everything has been perfect. But it wasn't until I discovered metaphysics that I began to actually jump onto my spiritual path and began to actually find the truth. And every time I think I understand what the truth is, I realize that there's just more, you know, and so I have to expand, you know, what I think the truth is, because there's always more, always more. But that's really sort of been what I've done. And I guess I really started in earnest opening to my spirituality and raising my consciousness in about 1990. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I began to study alternative healing as a hobby, and reading more and meditating, and it's just all kind of come together, and it's really come together for me in the last 8 or 9 years, I guess.
Right. So we do something similar, although your clearing has been divinely guided in its within cards, and you've kind of created your whole, well, as you call it, inner speak. You've kind of created a very interesting way of working with people and assisting them to clear their karma or their ancestral. I mean, it's really fascinating. Why don't you tell us about that?
Sure. So I had been doing a form of clinical kinesiology. That was the first thing that I studied when I started studying alternative healing. I studied Reiki first, and then I moved over. I was so shut down psychically back in those days that when I did Reiki, it worked for whoever I was working on and for myself. It wasn't very satisfying for me because I didn't seem to get any feedback from the person's body, mind, spirit. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really know what I was doing. I just knew that I could put my hands on someone and they would feel better. And so when I discovered kinesiology, you know, that really plugged right into my left brain, you know, and I'm all about words. I love to talk. So I took the kinesiology work that I'd studied and actually channeled in inner speak. It was a gift from spirit. I didn't even know I could channel. That's how shut down I was. When it started coming in, I literally sat in front of my computer for about 3 months, and I took breaks to eat, sleep, and go to the bathroom. And other than that, I was typing. And, well, actually, I should say I was typing and crying because when the information was coming in, it felt so incredibly loving that the tears just flowed. The whole time I would be typing, I was just, I was bathed in tears because I was just amazed. I didn't want it to end. And I didn't have the presence of mind to ask, okay, where am I getting this information? You know, which is probably, you know, hindsight being 20/20, that's probably the first thing I should have asked. It just felt so wonderful that it never occurred to me that it could be anything other than, you know, source inspired, you know. And it wasn't until maybe 2 years later that I actually realized, you know, who I was channeling. And that was, I didn't find that out until I actually met one of my mentors, who is Steve Rother, who channels a group of angels that call themselves The Group. Mm. And he pointed out to me that, he said, where do you think your work came from? You know, I know exactly what you do because they showed me, you know, we talked to the same folks here, mm-hmm. you know, and that was my kind of first experience at channeling. But InnerSpeak is a tool that it's like a language of the soul. And what it does is it helps a person at a conscious level to understand what their soul has been trying to communicate to them at an unconscious or a subconscious level. You know, the soul is constantly talking to us, and it's telling us what to do. And if we heard it and we obeyed, we would live in heaven on earth. We would have everything we desire. We would be able to consciously create instantaneously, and we wouldn't have struggle. We wouldn't have pain. We wouldn't have disease. We would have just abundance. But we don't know the language. So we don't hear it, or we ignore it because we think, oh, that's just me, you know, that's my own head, that's my imagination, or whatever, and we go about our business, and we miss all these incredible opportunities. So that's really what InnerSpeak does. I use muscle testing to allow a person's higher self to walk through my protocol and say, well, Lori needs to know this line on this page and that line on that page. And it basically weaves a healing story that defines what's holding a person back in any or all areas of their life. And then it tells the person exactly what they need to do to shift that energy and to let it go.
Nice.
And it works, you know, a session takes about an hour, okay. but it's precise. It's laser-like in precision of going to what needs to be cleared and then easily, peacefully, and harmoniously lifting it off.
Hmm. And so this is also cards, though. So you do muscle testing with your cards, or you, these are different?
No.
This is different.
The cards are a subset
okay.
of the full protocol is a book. It's about a 3-inch thick book. Mm. It's 144 files of information. And what I realized pretty quickly was, you know, there was only one of me, and there were a lot of people who needed to avail themselves of this sort of a clearing method. Mm. You know, so I was doing sessions on a daily basis like I do, but I also started teaching people how to do it.
Right.
And I began to realize that, and my guides were prodding me on this, that, you know, there are people who will play with a deck of cards who will not go to a facilitator or a therapist, and they won't even read a book, much less take a class. But you put some cards in front of them, and they will play with the cards.
Mm-hmm.
So I was guided to create this deck of cards that has, you know, sort of a nugget of what's in the large work. But what's interesting about the cards is that they seem to do some pretty powerful work on their own. So my goal is to empower the individual. I don't actually do any healing. What I do is I tell a person what they need to do, and I make them do the work.
Mm-hmm.
And so the cards are just another level of that. It's actually putting the responsibility and the accountability on the individual to do their own clearing with a fun tool that's almost like a game.
Hmm. Very neat.
Yeah.
So this is a manual. This isn't something that you've put into a book.
You know, I wrote a book called InnerSpeak for Everyone,
okay.
and it actually teaches someone how to do the protocol in a very, very brief manner. It makes the assumption that every issue is a past life issue,
mm.
which is a fair assumption to make because whether you believe in past lives or not, you know, time really doesn't exist. Everything is happening all at once. And what I found over the years that I've been doing this work is that many times it's much easier for someone to let go of their issues if they can put that responsibility somewhere else. So by saying, oh, yeah, well, this happened to me in a past life, it makes it really easy to examine some choices that might not have been appropriate or might not have been the highest and best choices, and then the consequences from those choices, and do the forgiveness work and the release work to let that stuff go. But it's almost like it's happening to someone else. It was me in another lifetime.
Hmm.
And for some reason, you know, that seems to work really well. So I did put it in a book. It's an e-book, and people can buy that on my website if they want to. But the InnerSpeak cards seem to work, you know, on the individual level, seem to work extremely well.
Nice.
And I've actually taken the cards and made them into an online offering. Nice. That people can subscribe to. It's a sort of like a lifetime subscription. It's the same price as actually buying the cards, but you use it on the computer, on your iPhone or whatever, so you have access to it wherever you are.
Hmm.
And it's automated, so it takes you through the entire process that you would do if you were pulling the cards, you know, manually.
Right. Nice.
Yeah.
So you also, you've been a busy girl. You also wrote a book called Soul Adventures.
Yeah.
And this is autobiographical.
Yeah, it's the story of how I managed to wake up from, you know, I was in victim mentality most of my life. I was raised in a dysfunctional family, and you know, but I thought everybody lived in the same sort of upbringing that I had. You know, I didn't realize that it wasn't healthy until I got to college, and then I began to see that, wow, everybody else's family's not as weird as mine is. You know, but I just, you know, I kept moving on with it. And actually what I did was I sort of like minimized the pain. I thought, well, it's okay. You know, it's okay to be verbally abused. It's okay to be physically abused. It's okay to give your power up to somebody else to make all the decisions, because that's how it's always been done in my family. And this kind of brings in some of the ancestral stuff, you know, that I've learned over the years with the InnerSpeak work. I mean, you know, we have blocks on our ability to manifest and create in our lives, and some of them come from this lifetime, you know, things that happened to us when we were kids or when we were teenagers or whatever. Some of them come to us, we brought them in karmically from other lifetimes, but sometimes it's just tradition that's gone on in our families for generation after generation. It's actually encoded in our DNA, but in many cases, it's almost, I was talking to a client about this yesterday, it's like misplaced loyalty.
Hmm.
We think because mom did it that we need to do it the same way, and we do this at a subconscious level where we'll make the same mistakes that our mom or our dad did. Out of loyalty to them, until we wake up and choose to stop that.
Yeah, I think it's really fascinating that we don't have enough with our past lives, and we don't have enough, you know, with our own life that we're living, that we pick up our ancestrals. We pick up the fact that we are, you know, women in North American culture, and, you know, you know, we pick up all of this stuff, and we have to find our way through it somehow, where there is no manual and there's nobody teaching us and there's nobody really here to guide us, unless we find, you know, the teacher that's there that can assist us with what we need.
Absolutely. And I truly believe that that's what this journey is all about. It's helping us to become aware of all of these things that have colored us to not be who we truly are. It's all about, I think we come here to remember and to wake up from the dream. That's what it says in the Course in Miracles, you know, to wake up from the dream and remember our own divinity. And then once we do that, then we can really step into our power and affect change not only for ourselves, but for others in the world. We can do what we came here to do.
Right. And you talk about the light bearer.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I found over the years, and I guess it's because from my own personal pain I found this one, is that I believe that some of us, one person in each generation of each family, I think, signs up to do this before they incarnate, and that is to be the light bearer for all the ancestors. Because it's my theory that things that happen to us on the earth plane can only be cleared on the earth plane. So if you reach the end of your life, you make your transition, and you had issues, you had karma that you'd created, you had judgments, and you had done things that you felt guilty for, and that you were holding grudges about or whatever, when you pass, all that stuff stays here on the earth plane, and it stays actually attached to your soul. But, once you make that transition and go to wherever it is we go in between lifetimes, and let's, metaphorically say that sitting on a cloud and playing a harp, there's nothing you can do about that until you have a choice. You can come back and work off those lessons, or someone in your lineage can assist you to clear that stuff up. And I think that, one soul in each family's generational lineage says, okay, I'll volunteer to do that. And part of me says, just shoot me if I ever just say I'm going to do that again. Why would I want to bring? Because what happens is that when the ancestors realize that you are willing to do that, they line up and they go, me next. And when they try to get your attention to assist them in letting go so that you can let go, it hurts. Yeah. I mean, for no reason your life turns to chaos, or you're sad and you have no reason to be sad, or you become ill and you have no reason to become ill. And the ancestors wouldn't do anything to hurt us for any reason. I mean, they love us dearly and they wouldn't do that, but they don't realize that they're tugging on your shirt sleeve and wanting assistance wreaks havoc in your life until you step up to the plate and let it go. So the light bearer is a very important role that one can take on. And it's quite interesting because it's almost like I can spot them a mile away when someone comes to me and for clearing work and they're doing a bunch of ancestral stuff. It's like, okay, I recognize you because you're another one of the light bearers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an easy job, but it's a very rewarding job because every time you assist one of your ancestors in letting go of some of their karma, you receive gifts and blessings that are beyond measure.
Right.
Once you clear it away, it's cleared away from them, but it's also cleared away ongoing throughout your lineage, so your children and your children's children don't have to deal with those issues.
Mm-hmm. And yet our soul really has nothing necessarily to do with the ancestral or the, where we chose to incarnate in this life, because it has its own individuated aspects of the oneness. And and that includes all our past lives and the issues that we chose to bring forth from that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
We really take on quite a bit of work, don't we?
Yeah, we do. I guess nobody ever said it was going to be easy, right?
Well, especially on this plane.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have another book called Reframe Your World. What's that about?
Mm-hmm. Well, Reframe Your World actually was a product of my own meltdown. I'd been working on myself. I had the inner speak work come in. I started doing clearings on myself on a daily basis and working with other people. And I really started growing, and I started growing so fast that I almost didn't recognize who I was anymore. And so one day I was on my way to the grocery store, and it was a Sunday. I can remember this. It's just like it was yesterday. And I had planned this menu. I was going to make an incredible meal for my family. And I went to our local, we have a, they're Whole Foods now, but it was called Harry's Farmers Market. Hmm. And they had, you know, prime meat and organic vegetables, all this wonderful stuff. And so I was going to go get all fresh and make prime rib for my family. And I got to the parking lot, I turned the car off, and I started to get out of the car, and I couldn't. I started crying. I literally had a meltdown in the grocery store parking lot. And, you know, every time I would think that I was, okay, I'm going to go in now, another wave of this overwhelming sadness would just hit me, and I would start bawling again. And I looked at the clock, and I realized I've been sitting here crying in the car for like 35 minutes. And I just, you know, I was like, I didn't know what was going on. And finally, I had the presence of mind to ask for help from Spirit and, you know, my guides and my teachers. And I said, please, you know, help me here. I am in pain, and I need help. And it was almost instantaneous that I just felt this wash, you know, that peace that passes all understanding. And I got the clarity that I wasn't sad. What I was afraid. Mm-hmm. I was consumed by fear because I had hit a wall and I didn't know who I was anymore. Mm-hmm. And it had just literally, it scared the bejeepers out of me. You know, and if you think I didn't know who I was, you know, nobody around me knew who I was. My ex-husband didn't know who I was. My kids didn't know who I was. You know, I had changed so radically over a period of about 5 or 6 years that I was not the same person. And even physically, I didn't even look the same. And so I made a commitment to myself in the parking lot of the grocery store that, wow, I think this is what in times past they would have called a nervous breakdown. And I know that I can't possibly be the only person because so many people that I knew were, you know, really on their spiritual path and really trying to grow and learn and raise their consciousness. And I thought, you know, I'm going to document this because everybody shouldn't have to reinvent the wheel and everybody shouldn't have to go through what I've gone through here. And so that's what I started. I started journaling. And I also made a commitment to one of the local metaphysical bookstores here in Atlanta for about 3 months from that time. To teach a workshop on changing perspective, and I called it Reframe Your World. Mm. And, you know, I had nothing to offer for that workshop, but I made myself accountable by making a commitment to teach this class. And a product of all of pulling the class material together and I journaled every day. I had recently, just before this, read Julia Cameron's The Artist Way. Mm. And one of the things that she has people to do is to write their morning pages. Every morning, you journal 3 pages, no more, no less, of whatever's on your mind. You know, it's just freehand and free thinking. And so I journaled every day. I wrote my 3 pages. And when the class came together, I then began organizing my notes from all of those days of journaling and pretty much had the skeletal structure of a book. And, you know, it took me another 9 months to finish the book. But that's basically where it started. And the book is all about remembering who you are, locating fear in your life and becoming conscious of it so that you can begin to eliminate it. Mm-hmm. And then figuring out where you're putting your attention and how to start moving that attention into conscious creation. And understanding about soul contracts and, you know, all the stuff that I learned over this this period of time. Right. And so that's what it is. It's 16 chapters and 16 exercises. It's an experiential book. So there's 16 exercises to help you to get out of the box.
Right.
Because we end up limiting our higher self. We limit God because we think we know what's best for us. And every time we try to define, we've put God in a box. And, you know, and it's all about learning how to get outside that box so that the universe can bring us everything we desire, because that's what we came here for, and that's what we deserve.
Right. And so what is the triangle then? You say it's a triangle of fear and control.
Well, that's when I really started examining fear, what I began to realize was it looks like a triangle. Mm-hmm. The first piece of it is that when we're feeling fear, then we're feeling like a victim. And in order to be a victim, there's got to be a persecutor. Mm-hmm. And most times it plays out in a triangular format because on the third point of the triangle is the rescuer.
Right.
So, you know, we're feeling like a victim, poor, pitiful me, and there's somebody who has done something to us to make us feel that way, and we're looking outside ourselves for somebody to help us out. Hmm. You know, and those of us who are healers have probably spent most of our lifetimes being rescuers,
yep.
You know, and perpetrating that triangle. But what the symptom of all of this is that when you're running around chasing your tail around the triangle of fear and control, you're not in the present moment. Because in the present moment, there is no fear. And the other side of that coin is that the only time you can create the reality that you want is when you're fully in your body and fully in the present moment. So if you're feeling like a victim and you're caught up in this looking for a rescuer and fearing the persecutor, you're either worrying about the past and what happened yesterday and, oh, my God, are they going to catch me for what I did or what I didn't do or what I said or what I thought, or you're worrying about the future. I mean, how am I going to keep the wolf away from the door? How am I going to pay the bills? What's going to happen tomorrow? Does he really love me? Is he going to call me? You know, all those things that are so much of the drama of our day-to-day lives until we realize what's going on and we opt to choose out of it.
Right.
First thing, before you can choose out of it, you've got to be aware of it. You've got to know that it's going on. So that's a lot of the meat of this book is helping you to increase your awareness.
Mm. And the soul contracts?
Yeah. You know, that's another thing that I discovered. I was married at the time that I was going through all this. I've been married for 14 years. And I thought I was with my soulmate, but what I realized was that, yeah, he was a soulmate. I've learned to relanguage that. The soulmate relationship that most people out in the world are looking for because they think that that's Prince Charming,
mm-hmm.
The soulmate relationship is a learning relationship, and it's usually fraught with a lot of lessons, and the lessons are always very fun. They can be quite painful. So, yes, he was a soulmate, but I don't think that there's just a soulmate, you know? I think we have contracts. And as souls, we contract with another person to help us to master our life lessons. And sometimes, for example, I believe that my first husband, who is the father of my two wonderful children, I'm pretty sure that he and I had a contract to bring these two kids in. No more.
Mm-hmm.
And probably both of us would have been a lot happier, and I think my kids would have grown up a lot happier if, you know, after my daughter was born, if we'd shook hands and agreed to disagree and go our separate ways and jointly raise our children, you know, but not expect the other person to anything more than that, you know? We had a contract to bring two souls in. Well, you know, you and I have a contract to assist each other, you know, to raise consciousness with our radio shows,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think this really kind of got in my face. I was working with a young woman who had come to me for some coaching work, and she was adopted, and she'd never been able to get past the abandonment where her mother gave her up for adoption in the hospital when she was born. And this had managed to color her life in a not very pretty picture. You know, she had allowed this resentment that went back to her birth to impact pretty much every decision she'd made in her 30-some-odd years. And, you know, just she couldn't forgive her mother.
Mm.
And one of the things that I found through the InterSpeak work was that her mother's contract was just to give birth to her, was to get her here. The people who raised her, her adoptive parents, were the ones that were supposed to raise her. You know, they were the plan B, but the woman was barren. She was originally had been the sole contract for this young lady to be her mom, but she couldn't give birth because she was barren. And so this young lady's soul hopped into, you know, plan B mommy and brought her in and got her exactly where she needed to go. And once she was able to actually examine the logic behind that, then she was able to forgive her birth mother. Mm-hmm. And her life has been significantly different since that day. I mean, she had never been able to fully love her adoptive parents mm-hmm. because she was so caught up in hating her birth mother.
Mm-hmm. Consciously.
And her adoptive parents were the ones that were supposed to have raised her all along.
Right. And yet she was conscious of this hatred?
Oh, absolutely she was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so these are the, once we can understand that pretty much everything that happens in relationships in our lives has to do with some form of contract. You know, I believe that there are these large soul contracts, which are people, you know, to be our parents or to be the children or to be our husbands or wives. There's another type of contract that I believe they're kind of like optional. I call them bump contracts. And like, probably that's sort of the relationship that you and I have, you know, that we knew each other in spirit, and we said, you know what, and if I ever happen to bump into you in this incarnation, then I'm going to assist you in making your show a success, and you'll assist me in making my show a success, and we will, you know, we'll work together like that, and then when we're done, we'll shake hands and move on and do other things.
Sure.
And again, that's just my theory. It's the gospel according to Jean Adrian. Take what you want and leave the rest.
Well, I have to agree with your soulmate perspective, because I think, you know, I think soulmates are, you know, a large group that we come with. And, mm-hmm. you know, some of them are to be relationships. Some of them you wouldn't want ever to be a relationship. Some
right.
of them were never supposed to be a relationship. They're just supposed to get you moving on your path. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Like, I'm pretty
sure.
You know,
another piece of this, while we're talking about contracts, you know, another thing that I see a lot of, people come to me, and probably for you too, but they'll primarily people come to me for counseling and coaching for generally one of four areas. One is that their relationships are not working, mm-hmm. or they want a relationship. Two is their career's not working, or their money's not flowing right, so they want that block removed. Three is health issue, and four is they'll show up on my doorstep, and they'll say, I know I'm here for some reason, but I can't figure out what it is. Can you help me figure out why I'm here? And the relationship one is interesting, because one of the things that I have found to be to occur fairly often is that people will meet someone, and they'll find this instant attraction to them. And they'll go, oh, my God, this is my soulmate. When, in fact, that person was their brother or their sister in a previous life. And what they're actually recognizing is that deep soul love that they mistake for romantic or sexual attraction. Mm-hmm. And they end up getting physically involved with this person that they were only supposed to remember as brotherly or sisterly. And, of course, the relationship ends up being disastrous because it'll bring up a lot of stuff about, you know, especially if the relationship becomes physical, it'll bring up a lot of people's issues about incest.
Mm.
Because, ooh, this doesn't feel right. I'm having a sexual relationship with my brother or my mom
mm-hmm.
or, you know, or my dad. When, in fact, it was just that deep soul love, that deep soul contact that they saw in that person's eyes or in that person's aura, and it felt like home.
Hmm.
You know, so sometimes, you know, and that's why I counsel people who are looking for relationships that you have to take it slow.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you have these instant, and it's not to say that there's anything wrong with love at first sight, but sometimes love at first sight can be a deep soul remembrance that is not meant to be a physical partner.
Mm-hmm. And it can sometimes just be a past life. It doesn't have to have been, you know, somebody from your soul group, but just somebody from your past life. I mean, currently, right now, I have two men that, you know, one of them, I know I'm very connected to both of them. One of them, you know, I've been married like 7 times. The last life was a marriage. And the other one, which I know is a strong connection, we have been married, but like 700 years ago. And most recently, it was a brother-sister, although it's been a father-daughter and grandfather-granddaughter. I mean, apparently in every life, it's been a male-female. I've always been the female. He's always been the male. So I'm still connected with the other person, although we've broken up, and mm-hmm. still wondering what's going to happen there because I don't know exactly. But, you know, knowing that there's this other connection, knowing that, you know, he has a different feeling than I do. But, you know, so it's always very interesting to see how things play out.
I know. It's amazing. It really is amazing. But, you know, I do find that we grow more and faster, and we can do higher spiritual alchemy when we are in relationship, because it takes that balance of the yin and the yang in order to do creation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, and it has to just happen. I mean, it's not something that one can go searching for.
Yeah.
I think that when we go searching, what happens is I think we end up finding those relationships that are the mistakes, that are the deep soul contract level from another lifetime or an ancestral thing, that's not the person who is supposed to be our life partner, our alchemical partner, if that makes sense.
Yes, I think relationships are one of those areas that we could probably talk and talk and talk and talk.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those areas that everybody seems to, especially right now, seems to have some interesting things happening.
Absolutely.
So, okay, so you've written 2 books and actually 3 books, and now you're writing another book.
Yeah.
And it's,
yeah, I'm really excited about this one. And, you know, every time I think I know exactly where this book is going, I find that there's another layer to it that is just is very exciting. It started with a meditation or a dream. After I finished writing Reframe Your World, you know, I had gotten pretty good at looking at the synchronicities that the universe brings, and I realized that I'm a pretty good manifester. I would have to say I can consciously create with the best of them. I just don't know how I do it. And some of my best creations have been things that I just, you know, like let fly out of my mouth, you know, without thinking. I can remember I was driving past the Atlanta airport with one of my girlfriends, and we were going to go to dinner somewhere on the other side of the city. And I just turned to her and I said, you know, Sherry, I miss going places on airplanes. Within 2 weeks, I manifested this incredible job paying me big bucks to fly all up and down the East Coast of the United States on airplanes. You know, and I wasn't even looking for a job. It's just quite interesting how that happened. You know, so the universe is very literal. It heard me say, oh, she wants to go places on airplanes. And the universe said yes and brought me a job. You know, and so I had reached this point where I wanted to figure out the formula. And so I went into meditation and I asked Spirit, I said, you know, I know I do it pretty well, and I really don't seem to lack for anything in my life, and you always provide, thank you very much. Can you show me how this works so that I can assist other people in learning how to do this? And then I went into meditation and almost immediately fell asleep. You know, it was what I used to tell my dog I was going to go napitate. And, so I was doing conscious meditation for a few minutes, and the next thing I know, I'm snoring and I'm gone. And I had this phenomenal lucid dream in which my guides came to me and they said, well, it's like manna. So remember when the Israelites were wandering around in the desert and they were starving. They had reached the end of their food and of their water, and they were desperate, and they prayed to their God to take care of them, and they were given manna. So they said, so this is how conscious creation works. If you ask and you trust, the universe will always provide for you what is for your highest and best good. It may not look exactly like what you thought you had asked for. Because, and we don't really know what manna looked like. I mean, because there wasn't any of it saved, because when the Israelites tried to save it, because they thought they might not have any the next day, it became putrid and it rotted. So there is no manna left over for us to dissect or look at the DNA of or say, okay, we'll clone this. It doesn't work that way. So they said, so if you would really trust that the universe would provide for you everything that you desire and everything that you require, then this would be so. And here it is. And they handed me a beautiful bowl. It was a wooden carved bowl. And inside the bowl was a freshly baked loaf of bread. And they said, and so here is manna. Try it. And so I broke the bread open. It was still warm. And it smelled so good. And I put it in my mouth. And it melted like cotton candy. And immediately I was satisfied. And they said, and this is all you need, but you have to understand that it will be provided for you when you need it on a regular basis, on a daily basis, if you will, but you can't sell it. You can share it with your family. You know, you can feed your family from the manna that we provide, but you can't give it away to others because they have their own karma, their own rules, their own needs. And so this is just for you. And that's all there is to it. It's just that simple. And so what happened in my dream was I immediately went mental on it. And I started, and this is what woke me up, because I started thinking, wow, so I don't need to eat food anymore because they're going to provide food for me. And I really don't need to worry about making money anymore because I spend most of my money providing for food or and so I'll have lots of extra money left over and I'll have tons of time left over because if you sit around and think about how much time you spend either buying things to prepare food or cooking food or going out to eat, you know, there's a huge hunks of time out of a day that could be turned over to more creative things. I was like, wow. And then what would happen? Well, the whole economy would collapse if everybody started doing this. You know, and I woke up in a panic going, oh, no, oh, no. But I'd asked them to give me the steps, and they started laying out for me the steps. And basically, the first thing was to become aware of what I have right now. Where am I right this moment? And what do I believe to be the next step for me, or what is it that I believe that I require? And all I have to do is ask for that or something better. And then I have to let go of it and trust that whatever this is will be brought to me and not really be too concerned about the shape, the size, the color, the amount. And know that it's just enough to take care of me for right now, no more, no less. And I can't hoard it. And if I try to, you know, put it in the bank or put it in the closet, then I'm really sort of negating the ability of the universe to take care of me. And then they said, and then it's your emotion and your feelings that really make this thing happen. And they said, so like, you know, back to the Israelite story, their feeling and their emotion was desperation. And so it was a very intense emotion. But they said, what will really work the best for you is joy. So that if you can, your part of this equation is to stay in joy. You know, as long as you stay in joy, then you're fueling the process for the universe to provide. And the final step, they said, is gratitude, is giving thanks, which also includes paying forward and assisting other people. Hmm. And I thought that was really cool. And as I began to work with this and write the book, the next thing that I was shown was an example of relationships. You know, so many people want that soul partner, that life partner, and they make their lists, you know, and they define all the things that they want, and they do it right because there have been thousands of books written on this subject, you know, and they'll make all their lists, and then they'll say, and this or something better is mine now, thank you, and that's all fine and good. But what happens is that when you're looking for, in my case, Mr. Right, there's a tendency to see that space right next to ourself as a hole that needs to be filled by Mr. Right. Does that make sense?
Mm, absolutely.
So what they showed me was that in your visualization process, if you can see that hole already filled with someone who's doing something with you that makes you filled with joy. And the example they showed me was a woman who wanted to manifest a relationship, and she's working in her garden. And, you know, she's got on her gardening clothes and her gardening gloves and her little gardening hat. And right next to her is the man that she is wanting the relationship with. And they're facing away. They're very busy working in their garden, and they're having fun. And he's got on his overalls and his straw hat, you know, and they're up to their elbows in mud, and they're just having a blast planting plants. And the universe says, yes. And it becomes so. That way, they're able to bring to you this relationship that is fun, that brings joy to your heart, that you enjoy doing something together with that person. You know, you've opened the space for the universe to provide for you something that will bring you joy.
Right.
And it's not just a hole, because if it's a hole sitting next to you, mm-hmm. the universe says yes. Because God's answer to every request is always yes. And then I'm beginning to learn that manna can be so much more than just the daily bread. I'm also now finding that manna is an enzyme or a secretion within us. I believe that it's a secretion that comes from the pineal gland in the middle of the head. And you can stimulate your pineal gland to create manna. And not only does it assist you in manifesting, I mean, I think that's where the word manifesting comes from, is manna, but it also will heal your body physically. Literally, it's the morning dew that comes from the pineal gland, the secretion, that I think is perhaps even the metaphor that was meant in the Bible, you know, when they talked about manna. And so I'm really doing a lot of exploration and research into this now, allowing, because our body is the temple.
Yeah.
And I believe that the tools that we require to do conscious creation are perhaps the glands, the endocrine glands in our body, the pineal, the pituitary, the thymus, the thyroid, the sex glands, the adrenals. They all work together to assist us in this manifestation process. So I think that the book will end up being a guidebook on conscious creation, as well as showing the scientific and the biologic hooks.
Nice.
Into how it works.
Nice.
But it's a work in progress. So stay tuned.
Okay. So you mentioned that there are universal laws in addition to the law of attraction. I think everybody's heard of the law of attraction by now, but what are the other universal laws?
Well, you know, there are a bunch of them, but there are several that I think really come into play when we're talking about manifesting. One of them is the law of the vacuum. And we forget this one. The nature abhors a vacuum. When you, for example, I mean, how often do you clean the dry cleaner hangers out of your closet only to find that, you know, in not too long later, there's a whole bunch more of those silly hangers. And, you know, because nature said, well, there were hangers there once before. I'm going to put more hangers in there. People who do healing work realize that when they take things out of a person's body or their energy field, they need to replace it with something positive. When you want to break a habit, you have to replace a habit with a more positive habit, or you'll end up going back to the old ways. So if you want to create something in your life, you need to clear a space for change so that the universe can fill your space up. And that means you've got to examine your life and see what it is you're willing to let go of. And then when you're able to let go of something, then the universe will bring you something better to put in that hole, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Another one of the universal laws that really plays out in the manifesting field is the law of no attachments. We get so hung up on how we think things are supposed to turn out that we get attached to that outcome, and that prevents the universe from bringing to us what we desire. Again, I go back to the Bible because I did a lot of religious studying earlier on. So one of the things that the Master Jesus said was, you cannot serve God and mammon. So you cannot, how I interpret that is that you can't allow spirit to provide if you're also focused on mammon. And mammon is stuff. Mammon is anything you give your power away to. So many people have interpreted that to be money. A lot of interpretations of the Bible say that what he meant was that you can't serve God and money. Well, I disagree with that. I think it's anything that you are attached to. Mm-hmm. And we're not supposed to have attachments. I put that on my Facebook page a couple of days ago, and you wouldn't believe the comments that I got back. You know, I got a lot of yay, sister, go for it. And I had one man come back, and he said, what a horrible way to live your life.
Mm.
And I'm like, wow, you know. So it runs the gamut, but the truth is the universe and how the universe works, whether we understand it or whether we like it, it's a very fixed design. And so this law of no attachments is very important, that, you know, if you want to manifest food, don't say, universe, give me oranges, because oranges might not be, you might be allergic to them and not even realize it. You know, so the universe might really want to bring you bananas, because that would be a better support. So you can't be attached to the outcome. You know, many people want to manifest relationships, and they want, you know, Mr. Right, and he's 6'3", and he's got blonde hair, and he's got blue eyes, and they spend their life searching for the guy with the blonde hair and the blue eyes at 6'3", and someone comes in who's 5'11", and has brown hair and blue eyes, who is their person that they were supposed to be life partner with. But he wasn't quite tall enough, and he had the wrong color hair, and they walk right past him on the street because they were attached to an outcome. And, you know, the universe doesn't interfere. It will allow us to make our choices. This is the planet of free choice. And you can choose to walk right past Mr. Wright, who's 5'11", with brown hair and blue eyes, because you're still looking for Mr. 6'3", with blonde hair. And you'll spend the rest of your life looking, and the universe will just nod its head and go, ooh, bummer.
What about? Yeah. Yeah. You're going to find somebody who's 6'3 and gay.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You know, and so that's another one. Another one is that it's the law of identity, and what that means is that everything is happening to help us to remember who we really are. No matter whether it feels good or feels bad to you, it's all part and parcel of helping you to wake up from the dream and remember who you really are. And another one is, and this is a big one in manifesting, is the law of flow or the law of cycles. And that is, you know, everything operates in a cycle. It's just like the moon and the ebb and the flow of the waves. It flows out and it comes back, and it flows out and it comes back. And so many of us get hung up on expecting that flow to be constantly towards us. And they don't realize that, you know, there's a period of activity and then there's a rest time. I mean, the Birds back in the 70s had that song, Turn, 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 mm-hmm. you know, to every time there's a season. Mm-hmm. And that was true. I mean, we have to work hard and then we have to rest. We have to play and then we have to rest. We have to receive and then we have to give. And if you break that flow, then it really screws up the manifesting cycle. Even if you break the flow by not receiving. I mean, how many times has someone paid you a compliment and you go, oh, I didn't really do that? What you did was you blocked the flow. And every little block on the flow actually impacts every other flow. You know, so one of the things that we have to learn to stay in alignment with the universal laws is to always receive well and always give well. When we try to hoard our stuff and give miserly, then the universe will return back to us miserly. Mm-hmm. And it works every time.
Yeah, I think that's an important one about giving and receiving. I think, you know, as women, often we're not very good at receiving. We're really good at giving. Really good at giving. Mm-hmm. But we're not all that great at receiving.
Yeah.
And ironically, it's the opposite the way it's supposed to be, because men with the male energy, the right side, is about giving. Females, yes, biologically is about receiving. And yet we're the ones that give, and they try to, you know, they try to give to us, but we don't know how to receive.
You know, and when it gets blocked up, eventually, then we let our body become the battlefield of that. Mm. So when, as women, we can't receive, then we end up with female problems because the front of the body is the receiving part. Or when it also gets kind of kinked up in there, we get low back pain, mm-hmm. you know. We have to practice receiving. We have to, and that starts with taking care of ourselves, giving to ourselves. You know, a lot of times we think, well, you know, I shouldn't do this because I don't, you know, mm-hmm. I don't really deserve to, you know, go get the mani-pedi today. You know, I really need to, whatever. You've got to take care of yourself first. You can only give to others when your cup is full. And that's a huge lesson of the law of giving and receiving, mm-hmm. is that you cannot give from an empty cup. So you have to stop, back off, take a rest, take care of you, go get your nails done, you know, go get a massage, whatever would make you feel good and would allow you to fill your cup back up before you can give to anyone else. That includes the kids, the husband, your friends, anybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jean, what a joy this has been. I thoroughly enjoyed our talk. I can't believe an hour has, you know, almost gone by.
I know, it's amazing.
Why don't you tell people how they can get a hold of you?
Absolutely. My website is jeanadrienne.com, JeanAdrienne.com. And I have a radio show every Tuesday night on Voice America. So all the information about the radio show is on my website, but it's called InnerSpeak Soul Adventures. It is at 8 o'clock Eastern Time on Tuesday nights.
Great. Well, again, it's been a great pleasure. I've thoroughly enjoyed this. I can't wait to have you back. I can't wait to be back on your show. And I think, you know, we are creating something here, and it is a nice support system. And I Absolutely. Think that's really what it's all about.
Absolutely. Thank you so, so very much. And I want to thank all of your listeners for taking the time as well to hear my philosophies.
But they're great philosophies. Looking forward to having you back.
Okay, great.
All right.
Have a nice evening.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.